Okay, in this short talk, I will explain some of the recent study on the dynamics of multi-phase interstellar medium. This is a list of my collaborators. These two guys are my students. Hiroshi is now a postdoc in Maryland, and Hiroshi is now finishing a PhD thesis now. And Patrick Ennebel is my collaborator in Paris, and Masa used to be my postdoc, but he gets permanent position in the southern part of Japan. So, okay, now I assume that most of you have heard Mark Hyatt's talk, and we know that this turbulence, this kind of turbulence property seems to be universal. But I also know that this will be tomorrow's maybe topic, so I will not go into the detail of this. I'll just explain that turbulence of molecular clouds observed by the supersonic line widths. Supersonic means that line width is larger than sound speed of molecular gas. And this seems to be universal. And this supersonic line widths are observed even in a cloud without star formation, without any star formation activity, such as in a high latitude cloud. Therefore, we wanted to understand the origin of this kind of supersonic motion in interstellar medium. So we all know that supersonic turbulence decays very rapidly, and the station time scale is much smaller than crossing time scale, therefore much smaller than lifetime, expected lifetime of the molecular cloud. So we need to, maintain this turbulent motion by some mechanism. So that is why we started our study on the formation of molecular clouds, because maybe the study of the formation of molecular clouds would provide some hint on the origin of this supersonic motion. In 2002, we reported some of the possible origin of the supersonic motion in interstellar medium. And after that, many groups are working on a similar or analogous problem. For example, Patrick Ennebel is doing a lot of work on this, and now Fabian Heisch and Enrique Vasquez-Semadin is also doing analogous calculations. So multi-phase medium, in my talk, multi-phase medium is essentially a two-phase medium. That's the warm neutron medium, cold neutron medium, in this density range. And in between, there is some thermally unstable branch. For the heating and cooling, the dashed line corresponds to heating. These are X-ray, cosmic ray, but most important, photoelectric heating due to dust grains. In this density range, most important coolant are singly ionized carbon, 158 micron infrared, far infrared radiation. So these are kind of ingredient in my talk. So these are basic equations. So of course you know, all of you know basic equations. We include radiative heating term, radiative cooling term, thermal conduction, and some viscosity. And in my talk, I will explain some of our two fluid MHD calculation where amplifolar diffusions are already included. So I'm jumping into the discussion of 2D dynamics, skipping 1D dynamics. Okay, this is a propagation of shock wave into warm neutral medium. This is shock front. Shock front propagate upward. We are watching the dynamics in a moving frame, moving coordinate. So this is a shock front. Shock front seems to be stable, but post-shock cooling range becomes thermally unstable and becomes shows a turbulent motion. This right panel is just only a blow up of this half of the region. So this kind of turbulent motion continues as long as shock wave propagate into the warm neutral medium. So this turbulent motion does not decay in this kind of calculation. So this is 2D.
It seems we can find a very small one.
In this case, yes, because it's kind of a simple setup, yes. But and of course we have done 3D calculation, but it's in the case without magnetic field, 2D and 3D are essentially the same. Shock front seems to be stable, but post-shock layer becomes thermally unstable and it becomes turbulent.
So you're moving into a uniform medium now?
Yes, into a uniform medium. And initially a very small perturbation resulting in this. And nowadays, Patrick and Nebel are doing huge dynamic range calculation. This is, for example, this is a 2D, but it's 10,000 cube square calculation. You can see, you can this is a blow up of this region. And with this kind of huge dynamic range calculation, you can discuss about, for example, power spectrum. You can discuss in Fourier space, so you can discuss a power spectrum, for example. And also, Fabian Haish and NDK is also doing similar calculation. And but Patrick also, this, I think this is not yet published, but he's also doing 3D calculation. But in this case, of course, we will lose some dynamic range. Okay, and what they found is a kind of simple one. Okay, power spectrum seems to be Kolmogorov-like. Not in, I think this is a Krasnov 67, but okay, this spectrum can be fitted by Kolmogorov type spectrum. But that is reasonable and obvious because in this type of calculation, the amplitude of velocity dispersion is essentially smaller than the sound speed of intercrump medium. That is warm neutral medium because temperature of warm neutral medium is about 10,000 Kelvin. Therefore, 10,000. Therefore, sound speed is about 10 kilometers per second, and velocity dispersion smaller. Therefore, this is essentially a subsonic turbulence with respect to the interclump, warm interclump medium. Therefore, they will follow Kolmogorov-like spectrum. And
I thought the power spectra is time dependent because it's a kind of a decaying turbulence.
No, I'm not talking about decaying turbulence.
Maybe
I confuse you. This kind of calculation, we are doing one kind of propagation one shock wave. And of course, it's a simple setup. This shock wave propagates forever, as long as we continue the calculation. Therefore, we can maintain the turbulent measure. But Patrick and other people actually doing the simulation of the converging flow. Converging flow, you have set up two converging from this side, and there's some gas leak out in this direction. So in this type of calculator, they are continuously inflowing the gas. Therefore, results are, if you take some time average, time and spatial average, the results are kind of a steady state. So it's okay. And this is a result for that kind of steady state. Okay. But I think the results are kind of reasonable and easily understood. It can be easily understood. So, and maybe this can be a reason for observed Kolmogorov-like power spectrum of an interstellar medium.
Okay. Hydrodynamic or energy simulation?
Which one? This is, I think, hydrodynamic. Yeah, I think this is hydrodynamic. Yeah. But he's also doing MHD calculation. Yeah.
That I thought it depended upon the angle with the turbulence
is anisotropic. Right. And also, okay, I'm going to that. This is for hydro, yes. Yes. And, okay, this is a quick summary of my talk. Okay. By the effect of thermal instability, propagation of shockwave into WNM, warm neutral medium, resulting in the generation of turbulent motion. But here, the turbulence means that motion of the cold clump inside thermally cooling cold layer. And the velocity dispersion is always on the order of a fraction of sound speed of warm neutral medium. Also, we can summarize the calculation. Actually, I skipped the discussion 1D part, but okay, in the 1D calculation, thermal instability only results in a collapse of cooling layer. This is only a geometrically thin cooling layer. This is not very interesting. But in a 2D or 3D simulation, shockwave results in the dissipation of energy, and some of the energy are converted to radiation. This radiation just escape away from the system, so it becomes useless. However, because of the thermal instability, some of the energy is converted to the kinetic energy of the translational motion of cold clump. And this energy resides in the system and survives. This is a kind of basic explanation.
And the thing is, that energy is now retained. So it seems to me that as the shock is propagating around, I'm going to get a turbulent layer behind the shock. But it has a finite volume because the energy is retained away. And so I might imagine then that the filling factor of these regions could be very small.
Excuse me. Decay time in this type of turbulence is totally different from the usual decay time observed in isothermal turbulence or polytropic turbulence. I will also show. Okay. We are now going to the further analysis. I think I don't have a time to go all of these, but maybe I skip something. For example, let's look at this. This is a calculation without shock wave. This is a periodic boundary calculation. It started from the almost uniform thermally unstable layer. It's periodic. There's no mechanical heating. There's no driving. Only a radiation is coming in and heat, radiated cooling comes out. That's all. But we can maintain this kind of turbulent motion. Okay, so. This is totally different from the usual decaying turbulence. And blue region corresponds to the cold clumps. And this red region corresponds to the low density warm neutral medium. And the yellow region is just between. It's in a transition layer. So you can see a very strange or very complicated behavior of this transition layer. And actually, this transition layer is very important. Of course, the existence of transition layer is due to the existence of thermal conduction. Okay. However, I must...
Very low.
This is very low, actually. But so, yeah, we are focused on some basic point. This is very low, yeah.
Can you tell us, how are you heating this? I missed it.
Oh, just uniform heating.
But it must matter how much you heat it, right?
Heating just I include just the usual prescription for interstellar photoelectric heating due to dust grains. I assume the radiation field is uniform.
And just for the interstellar value?
Interstellar, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I must mention that, however, in this calculation, we did not include physical viscosity. But we included thermal conduction, but we did not include physical viscosity. This means that physical Prandtl number, this is not a magnetic Prandtl number. Usual hydrodynamic Prandtl number is just zero. And actually, the amplitude of this kind of turbulence does depend on the Prandtl number. But I'm not going to the detail here. Okay, and I skip this evaporation process, and I'm going to the... I like to emphasize the importance of transition layer. By the discussion of this new type of instability. Here, blue region is a cold clump, and yellow region is a warm neutral medium. So there is an interface between this. And there's a blow-up, schematic blow-up. And we found that if this front is the evaporation front, then evaporation front becomes unstable, because evaporation means that velocity perpendicular to the surface becomes larger, of course. This is the evaporation. However, the tangential velocity, of course, is the same. This means that there is a kink in this velocity diagram. And it is very obvious that a pressure in the region here is larger than here. Therefore, increased pressure pushes the surface to the left. And opposite happened here and here. This means that amplitude of this sinusoidal perturbation grows. This is instability.
There's
a
counteracting effect called fire polishing, in which when you have the bulk out there, it's going to be evaporated more rapidly, so that
becomes... Right, but that is included. That's included, and we did some kind of detailed linear stability analysis, and we found, I will explain. But before that, I would like to mention that this instability is very similar or analogous to the Darius-Randall instability of the flame front and corrugation instability of MHD slow shock. Actually, this instability of slow shock is not well known, but we have an expert here. Yes. And yes. Okay. And this seems to be very interesting. Therefore, we have done a bit detailed linear stability analysis, taking into account the finite width of this transition layer. And with some approximation, because linear stability analysis was very difficult, we have done some approximation, but we obtained this kind of dispersion relation. Okay, and I know that today Ellen Zweibel is not here, but she and her student are actually working on the effect of magnetic field on this. I'm looking forward to her, to their result. Okay, now I'm going to MHD part. Okay, of course, if the magnetic field, initial magnetic field is weak, then essentially the result is similar. However, if you start with substantial magnetic field, for example, energy equipartition level of a magnetic field, something like a few micrograms, then actually results change drastically because we always end up in a magnetically dominated dense sheet because, of course, cooling radiation decreases temperature of a gas, but there's no cooling for magnetic field, right? There's no cooling for magnetic field in this type of ideal MHD calculation. Therefore, collapse of this cooling layer only results in magnetically dominated thin shell. Yes, but it's okay because here ionization level is at most something like 0.0 something, okay, a few percent or something, or even lower. In this case, most of the conduction are due to a neutral particle, so isotropic conduction is okay. So we should use Parker's value, not the Pitzer's value. Okay, the simple-minded ideal MHD calculation for this kind of thermal instability results in a very kind of strange result. And we don't like that result. Therefore, we started some more detailed calculation with this. And actually, that is a two-fluid calculation, which automatically include unpolar diffusion or other resistive non-ideal effect. Let's focus on this 1D. First, let's focus on 1D dynamics. Here the x direction, dynamics in x direction, we just suppose initial magnetic field line is just perpendicular to x direction. So, this is a result of 1D, two-fluid MHD simulation. Of course, thermal instability just result. We started thermally unstable with medium. Of course, that results in a collapse of dense shell, cooling dense shell. But this is a vertical axis is number density. This is a spatial direction and a number density. So, and that movie in magnetic field strength is strange because starting from the 1 microgauss, we have many dense shell, but again, result in a few micrograms. This is due to unpolar diffusion, and in this kind of a low density gas, people might think that unpolar diffusion is not important because ionization degrees were substantially high. However, unpolar diffusion in reality is very important because this length, unpolar diffusion is due to the proportional to the gradient of field strength. And gradient is determined by this structure. But this structure is essentially a transition layer. This structure is determined by thermal conduction. And this length scale is always on the order of field length that is determined by thermal conduction. And that is very small. Therefore, gradient is very large. And unipolar diffusion becomes important. And this is a quick summary of four kind of simulation. Okay, we started, this is the time. And this is the field strength evolution. Okay, we started various initial magnetic field strengths, but result in almost similar magnetic field strength. We find some kind of convergence. So why is this?
Which has the peak field strength?
Peak field, yes. And so, of course, we have a reason. We analyze the dynamics and the peak field strength essentially determined by this gathering of magnetic field line by the motion due to thermal instability, VTI, and leakage of a magnetic field line due to antipolar diffusion. And saturation value is determined by the balance between these two velocity. If you equate these two velocity and using a simple analytic formula for these two velocity, we can obtain this kind of formula for the peak value of the magnetic field strength. And yeah, this explains our simulation very well. So of course there's some dependence on the density, but this is kind of weak dependence. And we can say that maybe we will this is a kind of a convergence of magnetic field strength inside cold neutral medium. And this might be some explanation. This corresponds to some explanation of the observed constancy of magnetic field line over a wide range density in H1 cloud.
Yeah, you had said density, I thought it was 10 minus a half.
Well, right, but no,
and over a third of magnitude, that's the factor
three. Right, but yes, but
yeah, minus a half.
Right, but
you should.
Yes, also. Yeah, right.
Same
with
the
density. No, the pressure. The pressure in this one here. Those the readers they're looking at are quite typical.
But the pressure. If you're looking at cold H one.
Well, I'm saying
that
the observations are just for
tip to
meter
and
some
medium,
so they're all about the same pressure.
And
anyway, so it does seem.
Oh, no. I agree. Because this is only a 1D calculation. It's still preliminary. But I'm saying that maybe this analysis is giving us some hint for the understanding, because this is kind of a mysterious observation, right?
You simply ignore the equivalence.
Yeah, no. I thought people, what Alan would argue if she were here, is that you expect that risk to equivalent in the polar diffusion. So the example of polar diffusion is certainly important, as you say.
I would claim that it would be true without any polar diffusion. Yes, and that's why it's my disagreement with Adam and maybe the last as well.
And that's simply because the turbulence you're saying will cascade.
Yes. So the small scale, so it doesn't matter which is, what is the scale at which we introduce the cutoff. It's been known for what the.
But I would say that is a different problem because I'm worrying about
yeah,
the.
I understand, yes.
Yes.
But Chris is asking a different question.
Okay. Yes. Anyway, we have a kind of big problem of the. Big problem of the formation of magnetically dominated cooling layer in the case of ideal MHD, but in this kind of two-fluid MHD, we have unipolar diffusion that will kind of solving this problem. Okay, maybe I should skip this. Oh, we are doing now 2D two-fluid simulation, and Tsuyoshi Inoue now finishing his PhD with this kind of calculation. So, okay, final problem is for the case with higher Coulomb density, because so far I'm focusing on very small Coulomb density optically thin gas. So, of course, this is a basic equilibrium curve, but if you increase the Coulomb density, if you lose the heating radiation, therefore your temperature becomes smaller. Then, for example, this black curve corresponds to a kind of a little bit larger Coulomb density case. And with this type of plot, we can define allowed region for the pressure for the two-phase medium. For example, this red curve, this and this is allowed region for pressure because, for example, if the pressure is this value, we found two stable branches. Therefore, we have two phases. So we can plot this allowed pressure as a function of Coulomb density. Then result becomes like this. So only this region corresponds to a two-phase medium. And of course, if the Coulomb density becomes substantially large, then visual extinction becomes larger than unity, then we will lose heating radiation. Therefore, we will lose warm neutral medium. It's obvious, right? So therefore, this is a kind of a equilibrium physics picture of two-phase medium. But if the dense gas is, if the dense gas has multi-phase structure, for example, we can decay time of the turbulence becomes larger, and we have some instability between the transition rate between warm neutral medium, cold medium. So there are many good points in the multiphase medium. Therefore, we wanted to find some mechanism to keep or maintain warm neutral medium or low density medium inside this large Coulomb density cloud. And what we found is that the following. This is my final slide. But again, when I calculate the heating rate due to the dissipation of MHD wave inside usual molecular cloud. Here, actually, we assume some existence of MHD wave, but I think this is not assumption because it is observed. Right? Molecular cloud has always have large line widths. This means that molecular cloud, there is a turbulence in molecular cloud. Then, of course, many waves exist in those clouds. It's obvious. Therefore, we just took the Larson type relation, and we just calculated by linear dispersion relation. After this. Okay. And just simple calculation of the dissipation rate results in a huge, kind of huge heating rate. And for example, this is a usual standard interstellar medium case where the heating is due to radiation. And we can even increase the pressure more than this. Okay, this curve corresponds to this region. And you can even increase the pressure like this. So it's quite surprising, but heating due to dissipation observed wave-like motion is sufficient for the existence of WNA. So I put this and stop here. Thank you. So what is your?
Okay, first of all, I agree with your shoulder that there is difference in the but I disagree that it can be presented as an ensemble of linear waves. Mm-hmm. I think that it should be taken into account that the waves interact more linearly. And so in some sense, in the strong turbulence, it doesn't matter what is the linear dissipation. And it just matters that your energy is being dissipated from the 10 over 5 for your eight.
Okay, yes. No, I agree. Of course, I know that because I'm working on nonlinear wave dissipation of the solar wind case. However, that nonlinear coupling actually increases the dissipation rate.
If you already damp on the one emitter over time, it's difficult to increase. It's only very fast.
No. I'm not saying that this is dissipating in one emitter over time.
No,
We just used just linear dispersion relation of linear wave, and we can calculate the damping rate. This is, I would say, kind of a minimum dissipation rate. So, if you take into account such a nonlinear effect or some other effect, that will increase dissipation rate. But you know, I just assume that. Observed turbulent motion.
We're talking about the minimum.
Minimum? Okay. I'm just talking minimum.
What he wants to do is we don't care about the dissipation rate in terms of having the energy of the wave leave the system. What we're interested in is whether it goes into thermal energy of the gas and is broadly distributed. Because as you showed with the assumptions he made, he was getting extremely high thermal pressures inside the cloud. So my question, normally in the picture that I have, tend to think of the friction more as shocks. So I have thin regions saying which have high temperatures, but they radiate away, and then they go back to their initial temperature. And therefore, when I look at a typical point in this turbulent medium, the thermal pressure is low. Whereas you're saying, no, I have this uniform heating due to this dissipation everywhere and the thermal pressure at different points in time. So I would like
a very simple model. You know, here I don't think Tsukasan is claiming that everything is happening uniform.
A typical point. You go to the, as I understand, you're saying you go to a typical point. He wants to know what is the pressure, the thermal pressure in the intercon medium, because that then provides a bounding pressure for all the flux of these.
Right.
Whereas in the normal shock picture, you assume that all the gas is very cold is 10 Kelvin, and that's not happening. Your intercon medium is 10,000 Kelvin.
It's much, much warmer than 10 Kelvin. So, and I didn't catch your point.
I'm trying to see whether Alex agrees with you that you are going to essentially create this, that most of the volume will be filled with it.
I didn't comment on that.
But Chris, okay, we are just observing molecular graph, like CO, right? CO. We know that this CO, I mean, fluid elements are just moving with the velocity dispersion observed, right? So, and also we can assume that there is a magnetic field. So magnetic fields are threaded, this CO clump. Therefore, this motion of a cold clump ultimately, inevitably generates wave into interclump medium. So we just assume that those waves, and we just calculate based on very simple linear dispersion relation, and we found dispersion rate is substantial.
But
that's
you
all.
Probably assume that there's a compressible motion, right?
No. Of course, we know those kinds of things. Of course, complex magnetosonic wave decay much more rapidly than linear alpha wave. Therefore, I used dispersion rate for linear alpha wave.
Okay.
This is a minimum value, as I told you. This is a minimum value. It's still sufficient, seems to be sufficient. But of course, I'm not saying that this is true all the way down to the very high density molecular. There is some, I think maybe here is something maximum. If the density is something 10 to the 6, for example, then pressure is too high. And maybe this mechanism doesn't work. I think pressure in the interclump medium cannot be larger than the pressure of molecular gas of, say, 10 to the 6 particles. So this is some limit. But for lower density case, this mechanism works. That's what we found, yes.
So what's responsible for the energy dissipation in your model? Is it
you can say that because, just the damping of alpha wave. This damping of alpha waves, you can say this is due to the antipolar diffusion.
Because in my MHE simulations,
but it's okay, ideal. Okay.
So you didn't put it in terms
of
the antipolar diffusion,
but you're saying you didn't know.
Yes.
So my understanding is when you were looking at the atomic medium, you were maintaining the turbulence because you had this heating, this FUV heating, to maintain the warm medium. Now here you're trying to make a warm medium through MHD wave heating.
Yes.
But still, the energy source is going to decay away. So I don't see how you.
Yeah, I think you are talking about the ultimate origin of such turbulent motion. Of course, I think that is from outside. But here, I'm just assuming the existence of those motion according to the observation.
Right. I thought a line of reasoning you were promoting was that you could maintain the motions in a warm medium through thermal instability by just heating that warm medium, and then. For the length of clouds, you want to maintain turbulence, even when there's not stars, for longer than the dynamical time. So you need this MHD wave heating to be longer than the dynamical time. You're heating, but it's still the same source of energy in the cloud. So unless you're going to do something extra, you still have the same problem.
I think I understand your point. In this high density cloud, we have not yet proved, but we are just thinking that, we are guessing that energy is coming from the larger scale. Maybe larger scale turbulent motion of multiphase H1 cloud or something. So we are guessing something. Is that the answer to your question?
So something would be similar, in terms of energy arguments, similar to a cascade from larger scale.
Right, yeah, in that sense.
surely the energy budget is dominated by the shocks and flow.
Shock?
The dissipation. You're considering supersonic turbulence and arguing that waves propagating away from the dense clumps will dissipate and produce a warm medium. Am I misunderstanding?
No. Roughly speaking, here we are proposing the model where the motion of the cold clump is, of course, supersonic with respect to the sound speed of molecular gas, but that is subsonic with respect to the interclump medium, in a sense that we are dealing with some subsonic turbulence. We are proposing a subsonic turbulence model for supersonic, observed supersonic molecular gas.
So if electric clouds are filled with warm neutral medium, which would occupy the vast volume of the cloud, wouldn't that be fairly easy to tell? If the bulk of the volume of molecular clouds is filled with a warm neutral medium at 10,000 Kelvin, wouldn't that be fairly easy to tell?
Observationally?
Yes.
No, it's very difficult because I discussed with many experts on H1 observation, but it's very difficult to observe the existence of warm medium inside cloud because warm medium is everywhere. It's very difficult. Yeah, maybe we should look at some special species. I mean, you have to work on the chemical evolution.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very distinct thing. It's everywhere you've got the boundary between this warm gas and the cold, right? You're going to have some region between us at intermediate temperatures. Mm-hmm. It's going to drive a lot of endothermic reactions. CH+.
Right, yeah, for example, yeah, maybe.
I would think that would be a very definite prediction.
Right, but still, situations are very complicated because if you look at this kind of movie, there's evaporation and condensation. So maybe in a high density regime, we can create molecular material, but they will go into low density phase. But maybe if we don't have a photodissociating UV radiation, those molecules survive even in this low density phase. So because
not much is
but 10,000 is still CO is survival, for example. 10,000 may be difficult, but yeah. Without radiation? Without radiation, you mean.
So 10,000 is a lot cleaner.
CO is dissociate? Okay, I see. Well, then disappear somewhere. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's very complicated because they can travel kind of finite distance by this kind of evaporation mechanism.
Yeah. I could comment the previous comment about the spectrum and the direction of the mm-hmm. I don't think that the observation with, for example, starting velocity. You can distinguish the spectrum parallel, in particular, between magnetic field in the local system of Earth. If you do, as most people do, in the global system of Earth, you will see this.
Well, it's not a mixture of the factors. Well,
it depends on which system you're doing, but you get a mixture of different ideas. Yeah, but it won't be common raw. It will be absolutely dominant. But in general, these gains of the particular power law spectrum is for these guys with big plus like GM, Orcan. I never, for example, was interested in this particular number, which is 5/3 or 8, because you need to have much bigger numerical simulation than 5.5 to make the distinction. For example, the Wunderlich simulate, which I didn't know to understand about this supersonic turbulence, the heavy and 5.5 spectrum, and then I think it's a result in Gritzuk new simulations, which show that it's a bottleneck effect, and that the real supersonic is that we expect minus 2. In 2D simulation, the bottleneck and all this is much more severe. So I wouldn't really say, especially if you have multi-phase.
Well, too bad. If I understand what you're saying, all the work that Olga and Jim have done on the evolution of light and cloud is totally wrong.
No.
They're assuming that it's highly supersonic turbulence. The vast bulk of the material is at 10,000 degrees. It's a completely different picture. So therefore, you take all their work and you just throw it in the bin.
No.
I'm sorry, say our work is irrelevant, not lost.
No.
Don't do this while they are in the audience.
No. Well, no. We're just proposing kind of a challenging idea. Maybe we're wrong, but well, especially the last point, dispersion rate.
You're right, and they're saying correctly, as Jim said. If you're correct, they're wrong. It's sort of either work or not.
Maybe both are wrong. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, well, let's thank the scientists.